Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 10th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Council okays $600,000 for Easy Rider. That is the same amount since fiscal year 2020. By Stuart Doreen. Include public transportation in the list of items that cost more as the decades pass. The Midland City Council approved $600,000 for the Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District for operations at the Council's meeting Tuesday. The expenditure, according to the city, hasn't changed since fiscal year 2020. It is also more than double since when Easy Rider was getting off the ground in Midland, Odessa. For fiscal year 2004, the City of Midland's expenditure for annual operations for the bus service was $231,242. That amount increased to $300,000 by 2009, according to previous Reporter Telegram articles. Easy Rider was started by officials in Midland and Odessa in the early 2000s. At that time, it was stated that both cities would provide the same amount. That amount would be in addition to revenue from users and funding collection from state and federal government. According to the Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District's budget, which was part of the council's agenda packet, total income for 2023 included a $4.491 million in federal funding, a $712,000 state grant, and $1.2 million combined from the cities of Midland and Odessa. Bus fares expected were $275,000. Total expenses included $3.151 million for wages, $1.08 million for benefits, and $1.156 million for materials and supplies. Total income and expenses are expected to reach $6.743 million. Midland-Odessa urban transit officials said that ridership in Midland dropped to 98,571 last year, compared to 164,541 in 2019. Through July, there have been 97,489 riders, according to the district. As you can tell, our numbers were greatly affected by the COVID pandemic, said Douglas Provence, general manager of the Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District. They are showing signs of recovery this year and will bounce back to near 2020 level. I expect Easy Rider to provide 220,000 rides this year in Midland-Odessa and to fully recover in the next 2 years. This article is entitled Council Approves Paving Contract by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council approved a nearly $2 million contract on Tuesday to pave a road off Texas 349 in North Midland. The project is Solomon Lane from Texas 349 to A Street and is part of the 2017 road bond approved by Midland voters. The contract is considered a fourth or fifth phase project and calls for a total cost, including contingencies, of $2.31 million. The paving company is Permian Paving, which provided the lowest of three bids that the city received. The Solomon Lane Paving Bond Project will be the first project Permian Paving Inc. has worked on for the city of Midland, the city reported in its agenda packet, and the first project of this size or scope that they have worked on. The City of Midland Road Bond website shows that 17 of 25 road bond projects are completed. It lists two that are 60% complete, Thomason Drive and A Street between Cuthbert Avenue and Indiana Avenue. Other projects that the city is still working on include Garfield Street, 100% design completed, Main Street, 60% design completed, A Street between Wadley Avenue and Scarborough Drive, 100% design completed, and still utility work to be completed, New York Avenue, 20% construction completed, and Illinois Avenue, design and paving work to be completed. This article is entitled, Oil Giant Donates $1 Million to Hogan Park. Group to name youth baseball, softball turf fields, ConocoPhillips Field. By Stuart Doreen. The Permian Basin Quality of Place Conservancy announced Tuesday that the first of 14 renovated youth baseball, softball turf fields at Hogan Park will be named ConocoPhillips Field, following the company's recent $1 million donation to the project. We believe in investing in areas that improve the quality of life in communities where our employees work, live, and raise their families, Vice President Scott Kidwell said. By supporting the park's renovation, we're ensuring Midland's next generation enjoys Hogan Park for years to come. The Conservancy reported that each of the baseball-softball fields will be 300-foot fields. Providing first-class facilities to the youth in our community is an important part of this project, said Quality of Place board member Chris Ginsback. The gift from ConocoPhillips helps provide new opportunities to our citizens that Midland has lacked in the past. In addition to the 14 turf baseball-softball fields, Hogan Park will feature 4 baseball-softball grass practice fields and 5 full-sized multipurpose turf fields. The multipurpose fields will primarily be used for soccer, football, and lacrosse, with the potential to be used for other sports as well, according to the Conservancy. Full-size fields allow for participants of all age groups to utilize the fields for both recreational and competitive levels of play. In addition to new sports fields, the 128-acre Hogan Park will include shaded canopies and lawns for the community to gather, rest, picnic, and play. The park will also feature up to 7 miles of beautiful trails connected to the existing Sibley Nature Trails and Midland's future hike bike system, playgrounds, and splash pad. This column is called Crime in Brief. Gulf Coast Task Force arrests 2 fugitives connected to shooting, by Mercedes Cordero. 2 fugitives wanted in connection with a June shooting in Midland County have been arrested, according to the county's spokesperson. They were arrested by the Gulf Coast Task Force for aggravated robbery, according to the press release. Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies responded on June 17th to County Road 130, where they found a man laying in the middle of the road with severe trauma to his face. The man was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where it was discovered that he had been shot, according to the press release. We never like to see crimes occur in our community, Sheriff David Kreiner said. Like Paul Harvey would say, you can run, but you can't hide. We will work tirelessly to apprehend those that commit offenses in Midland County. Cyber tip leads to Louisiana man's arrest for possession of child pornography. A Louisiana man was arrested Friday on a warrant for possession of child pornography, according to court documents. John A. Trahan, 39, was charged with possession or promotion of child pornography, a third-degree felony charge. On January 24th, a special agent with the Texas Department of Public Safety Criminal Investigation Division reviewed a National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's cyber tip on a Dropbox account. The tip indicated that on June 24, 2021, 43 videos meeting the definition of child pornography were uploaded to the account created by an Aaron Trahan, according to court documents. 5 videos were reviewed and determined to be child pornography, according to the arrest affidavit. Under federal law, electronic services providers, like Dropbox, are required to report any distribution of child pornography to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The organization then generates a cyber tip, according to the arrest affidavit. Trahan was identified as the account holder after the special agent requested the subscriber records. The IP address was traced back to his residence in Midland, according to the arrest affidavit. The account was activated in 2014 and was still active as of February, according to the arrest affidavit. Trahan was released on bond Friday, according to Midland County records. This article was by Mercedes Cordero. Judge sentences dad to life for killing two daughters. From the Associated Press. Dallas. A suburban Dallas man who evaded arrest for more than 12 years after the fatal shootings of his two teenage daughters in 2008 was convicted Tuesday in the killings that prosecutors said were driven by his obsessive desire for control. Yasser Syed, 65, was found guilty of capital murder in the deaths of 18-year-old Amina Syed and 17-year-old Sarah Syed. Prosecutors did not pursue the death penalty, so with the conviction, the judge sentenced Yasser Syed to life in prison without parole. This article is entitled, Fire Destroys Five RVs, Four Vehicles, by Midland Reporter Telegram. Multiple agencies were dispatched to a structure fire south of Interstate 20 in Midland. A county spokesperson reported that the fire happened in the 3100 block of South Texas 349. Fire crews, including the Midland County Fire Marshal's Office, responded around 3:20 p.m. to the fire, which resulted in a total loss of five RVs and four vehicles, according to the press release. The cause of the fire is under investigation and unknown at this time. No further details were available. We'd like to thank all of the local agencies who responded promptly to this fire, Fire Marshal Justin Bunch said. The volunteer fire departments are a vital asset to our community. We believe the quick response today potentially kept the fire from damaging more homes and vehicles. This article is entitled, Stretcher Burks Adds to List of City Council Candidates. Sign-up period to put name on city, MISD, or Midland College ballot ends August 22nd. By Stuart Doreen. Editor's note, a profile of Amy Stretcher Burks is scheduled for an upcoming edition. The third Midland City Council candidate filed Tuesday for the November 1st election, according to the city secretary's office. Amy Stretcher Burks became the first candidate for District 4, generally West Midland. Also on the ballot in the city races are Lori Blong for mayor and Jack Ladd Jr. for District 3, generally Central Midland. Three Midland ISD candidates, Thierry Strambler, Reagan Hinojos, and John Trishidi III, have filed to put their names on the November ballot. Strambler and Hinojos will run in District 3 and Trishidi in District 5. Two Midland College candidates have filed, Steve Kaiser in Place 1 and Linda Cowden in Place 2. All of Midland College's seats are at-large positions. Elections on November 8th will include Midland ISD, City of Midland, and Midland College races. Those races include MISD Districts 3, 5, and 6, Midland College Places 1, 2, and 3, and City of Midland Mayor and Districts 3 and 4. The sign-up period to put a name on a local ballot is July 25th to August 22nd. This article is entitled, Gasoline Demand Forecast is Cut for This Year Amid High U.S. Prices, by Chunzi Xu, Bloomberg. The U.S. will consume less gasoline this year than previously thought, although total demand will still top 2021 levels, according to the latest government forecast. Gasoline consumption for 2022 is now forecast at 8.83 million barrels per day, down from a previous forecast of 8.84 million, according to the Energy Information Administration's short-term energy outlook released Tuesday. The expected drop is largely due to a 120,000-barrel-a-day reduction in the third-quarter demand estimate, which more than offsets a forecasted increase in the final quarter of the year. The revised forecast comes after retail pump prices surged to a record of more than $5 a gallon in early June, causing many Americans to alter their driving habits amid soaring inflation. And while the national average has fallen for 56 straight days, at $4.033 a gallon, that's still 26% higher than a year ago, according to Auto Club AAA. Analysts say lower fuel prices alone haven't been enough to lure drivers back to the roads. The downward revision in third-quarter demand likely incorporates the slowdown evident in the weekly estimates for July. Relatively lower gasoline demand compared with 2021 last month helped refill inventories, along with higher refinery utilization, the EIA said in the report. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Pioneer, Tax Bill May Crush Mom-Pop Drillers, by David Weth, Guy Johnson, and Katie Greifeld, Bloomberg. The proposed new minimum tax on corporations and fees for methane emissions, both of which are in a sweeping bill passed by the U.S. Senate this week, could make life impossible for many small U.S. oil and gas producers, according to one of the country's biggest independent producers. The ultimate impact of Democrats' landmark climate bill on the roughly 15,000 small oil and natural gas explorers in the U.S. could be fewer wells being drilled in the future, Scott Sheffield, chief executive officer at Pioneer Natural Resources Company, said Tuesday in a Bloomberg TV interview. There'll be more pressure on that small mom-and-pop independent, Sheffield said. It may put a lot of them out of business. While some energy industry groups have protested at the Biden administration's tax, health, and climate bill, some of the largest U.S. oil and gas companies have been supportive, particularly on the steps to mitigate methane, a powerful greenhouse gas. Pioneer, along with Devon Energy Corporation and ConocoPhillips, last month announced its commitment to reduce methane emissions by joining the Oil and Gas Methane Partnership 2.0 initiative. Pioneer expects to not pay a tax on emissions as a result of its plan to ban routine flaring by 2025, Sheffield said. This article is entitled, Oil Output in U.S. Set for Record 2023, Despite Slowing Growth, by Sheila Tobin, Bloomberg. U.S. oil production remains on track for a record 2023, even as output grows more slowly than anticipated amid surging costs and labor shortages in America's shale fields. Output is expected to expand at an average rate of 840,000 barrels a day next year, down from a prior forecast of 860,000, according to the Energy Information Administration. While production is still seen reaching an all-time high in 2023, the government revised its forecast slightly lower to 12.7 million barrels a day. The current annual record is 12.3 million, set in 2019. The reduced supply forecast may weigh on an already stretched market after Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine prompted widespread bans on Russian energy. The U.S. was previously a key swing producer, usually capable of ramping up supply quickly as global demand shifts. In recent years, however, shale drillers have limited growth in favor of increasing shareholder returns and in the face of soaring oil field costs. The EIA also lowered this year's production forecast, estimating U.S. output will average 11.86 million barrels a day in 2022. That's the lowest forecast since the agency's January report. Meanwhile, the agency sees global petroleum consumption growing by 2.1 million barrels a day this year and next, but cautioned that a recession poses demand risks. Less robust economic activity in our forecast could result in lower than forecast energy consumption, the agency said Wednesday. This article is entitled, Devon Inks $1.8 billion Deal to Expand in Eagle Ford, by Simon Casey, Bloomberg. Devon Energy Corporation agreed to acquire Validus Energy for about $1.8 billion in cash to expand in the Eagle Ford shale patch in South Texas. The deal will add to Devon's cash flow and earnings in the first year and boost its variable dividend by up to 10% based on current oil futures prices, the company said Tuesday in a statement. Devon also said the transaction will enable the acceleration of the return of cash to investors via its existing $2 billion stock buyback program. The shares rose as much as 1.6% in pre-market trading. It's the biggest takeover for Devon since its $8.5 billion purchase of WPX Energy Inc., which was completed in 2021. Buying Validus will add 42,000 net acres adjacent to Devon's existing leasehold in the Eagle Ford. Validus's current production is about 35,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, with volumes expected to increase to an average of 40,000 barrels over the next year. Denver-based Validus bought more than 400 wells in the Eagle Ford from Ovintiv Inc. in May of last year for $880 million, roughly a third of what Ovintiv paid in 2014. This article is entitled Berkshire Hathaway Bets $47 Billion on Oil Sector, by Josh Funk, AP Business Writer. Omaha, Nebraska. Warren Buffett's company has bought up more than $11 billion worth of Occidental Petroleum stock this year, giving Berkshire Hathaway control of more than 20% of the oil producer. Occidental stock rose more than 3.5% on Tuesday to $62.18 after Buffett revealed his latest purchases of nearly 6.7 million Occidental shares worth more than $400 million. Wall Street follows Buffett's actions closely, including his investments in Occidental Petroleum. Its shares have more than doubled in price this year. Berkshire has repeatedly acquired shares of the Houston Driller whenever the stock falls below $60 in recent months. Buffett also dropped more than $20 billion on Chevron stock in the first quarter of this year and took advantage of the surge in oil prices after Russia invaded Ukraine. Berkshire's Chevron stake is worth more than $24 billion. That means Buffett's Omaha, Nebraska conglomerate holds nearly $47 billion in oil sector investments because Berkshire holds another $10 billion worth of preferred Occidental shares that it picked up in 2019 when it helped finance Occidental's purchase of Anadarko. And Buffett may not be done. Berkshire owns warrants to buy another 83.9 million Occidental shares at $59.62 apiece. Edward Jones analyst Jim Shanahan estimates that Berkshire's oil sector holdings are worth $46.6 billion today, even without the value of those warrants. Because Berkshire now owns 20.2% of Occidental stock, it will be allowed to record a proportional share of the oil producer's earnings on its earnings reports. That could provide a roughly $2 billion a year boost to Berkshire's bottom line. Buffett aggressively invested in stocks this year when the market was weighed down by soaring inflation and rising interest rates. Berkshire spent more than $51 billion on stocks in the first quarter, but the pace of its investment slowed considerably in the second quarter when it was a net buyer of only $3.8 billion in stocks, with much of that going into Occidental. Berkshire will detail all its second quarter stock purchases later this month. In addition to the stakes it holds in companies, Berkshire owns more than 90 companies outright, including BNSF Railroad, Geico Insurance, several major utilities, and an eclectic assortment of manufacturing and retail businesses like See's Candy, Dairy Queen, Helzberg Diamonds, Fruit of the Loom, and Precision Cast Parts. Most of those businesses have performed well this year, But Berkshire reported a $44 billion quarterly loss over the weekend on a sharp drop in the paper value of its stock portfolio. This article is entitled, U.S. Inflation Likely to Stay High Even as Gas Prices Fall, by Christopher Ruggeber, AP Economics writer. Washington. Americans may finally be catching a break from relentlessly surging prices, if just a slight one, even as inflation is expected to remain painfully high for months. Thanks largely to falling gas prices, the government's inflation report for July, to be released Wednesday morning, is expected to show that prices jumped 8.7% from a year earlier. Still a sizzling pace, but a slowdown from the 9.1% year-over-year figure in June, which was the highest in four decades. The forecast by economists, if it proves correct, would raise hopes that inflation might have peaked and that the run of punishingly higher prices is beginning to ease slightly. There have been other hopeful signs, too, that the pace of inflation may be moderating. At the same time, an array of other economic developments are threatening to keep intensifying inflation pressures. The pace of hiring is robust, and average wages are up sharply. And even as gas prices fall, inflation in services such as healthcare, rents, and restaurant meals is accelerating. Price changes in services tend to be sticky and don't ease as quickly as they do for gas, food, or other goods. Those trends suggest that overall inflation may not drop significantly anytime soon. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, August 10th. Darlene Marie Place Boudreaux. Darlene Marie Place Boudreaux of Midland passed away August 1st. She was born on October 5, 1945, to Reese Lewis and Daisy Marie Place in Abbeville, Louisiana. She is survived by her husband Alfred, children Reese Lewis Boudreaux and wife Allison, Pamela Margaret Stewart and husband Billy, Tricia Elizabeth Elliott and husband Mike, and Billy Jack Boudreaux, all of Midland. She is also survived by eight grandchildren and one great-grandchild. Memorial service will be held on Thursday, August 11th at 11 a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Following the service, please join the family for a reception in the church parlor. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dennis Duke. Dennis Ray Duke, 77, of Salina, passed away on August 8th in Salina, Texas. Funeral services will be held 11 a.m. Thursday, August 11th at Friendship Church in Frisco, with Reverend Mark Crawford and Reverend Brad Sugg officiating. Visitation will be 10 a.m. until service time. Graveside services will be 1 p.m. Friday, August 12th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland, with Reverend Milford Thomason officiating. Coker Matthews Funeral Home in Greenville, Texas, is in charge of the arrangements. Mr. Duke was born on November 18, 1944, in Bastrop, Louisiana, to Ray Emanuel Duke and Catherine Parker. He is survived by his wife Glenda Duke, sons Ray Duke and wife Elizabeth, Jeff Duke and wife Chelsea, and Rusty Morris and wife Michelle, daughters Jennifer Arnold and husband Chad, and Jan Crawford and husband Mark, as well as several grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, please donate to Serving Orphans Worldwide, soworldwide.org. Paul Dean Ormsby, Jr. Paul Dean Ormsby, Jr., 77, of Midland, passed away peacefully on August 5th with family by his side. The celebration of life service will be at First Baptist Church in the chapel on Saturday, August 13th at 10 a.m. with Reverend Jim Auld officiating. Paul was born on July 15, 1945 in Gorman, Texas, to Paul Dean Ormsby Sr. and Francis LaRue Dean Ormsby. Paul is survived by his wife Penny of 55 years, a son Philip Dean Ormsby and his wife Jody, and son Wesley Dean Ormsby of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welt Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Rodney Johnston. Rodney Johnston, 80, died comfortably at his home in Midland on August 7th. He was born in Big Spring to Zelma Crow Johnston and William Jordan Johnston on December 18th, 1941. He is survived by his son, Jeff Johnston, and daughter-in-law, LaDonna, of Midland, his daughter, Amy Biedrowski, and son-in-law, Mike, of Midland, as well as numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. The viewing will take place at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland on Wednesday, August 10th, from 5 to 9 p.m. The family will receive visitors from 6 to 8 p.m. The burial will be on Thursday, August 11th at 11 a.m. at Mount Olive Cemetery in Big Spring. Online condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Death notices. Jose Castillo. Jose Alvarez Castillo, 55, of Midland, passed away August 3rd. A memorial service will be Saturday, August 13th at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Chapel. Arrangements are made with Heavenly Gate Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net or the website at www.heavenlygatefh.com.
This is Mackie, and I will be reading from the Odessa American, Wednesday, August 10th, 2022. Gatlin Giving Back to UTPB by Michael Bauer. For over 65 years, Larry Gatlin has been able to call himself a singer, songwriter, a storyteller, and a Grammy Award winner. He'll soon get to add professor to that list. In the spring of 2023, Larry, the older sibling of the Gatlin brothers, which includes Steve and Rudy, will teach at the University of Texas of the Permian Basin under the title of Professor of Practice, which will be a new master class about storytelling. The announcement was made during an event Tuesday at the UTPB Student Center. Gatlin, who lives in Nashville, Tennessee, was back in Odessa for the event, where he took questions from UTPB President Sandra Woodley and played a few parts from his songs on stage. The great novelist Thomas Wolfe wrote a book called You Can't Go Home Again, and I don't think he was right, Gatlin said. He was wrong. But it's a great novel, by the way. It's great to come home. Nashville is my home away from home. Odessa, since third grade, has always been my home. The opportunity to come back here and work with Dr. Sandra and all these wonderful people to talk not to them, but with them and share things. I'm glad to be here. Everyone's treated me beautifully, like an old friend. Details about the class are still being worked out, as Gatlin is expected to teach for a total of 8 weeks of the semester. He's going to start Welcome Back, Superintendent Visits as Kids Learn the Rules by Ruth Campbell. Procedures, rules, routines, and getting used to their campuses was the main goal for the first day of school Tuesday in Ector County ISD. Superintendent Scott Murray visited several campuses such as Ireland Elementary, Bonham Middle School, and George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa. Media was invited to Bonham, and the Odessa American followed him to New Tech. Most pre-kindergarten through fifth graders started Tuesday, along with sixth and ninth graders. The rest of the students will start Thursday. We learned during the pandemic that phasing students into the school year is a really good thing. We saw lots of happy kids today, Murray said while at Bonham. Bonham on Tuesday hosted sixth graders only. Murray said this is aimed at giving them a chance to transition in over the next couple of days. They get the run of the school themselves. They get to meet, all of the teachers in the building get to really learn rules, procedures, and processes and become acclimated in anticipation of the 7th and 8th graders joining them later in the week, Murray said. Our high schools are the same way. Today's the first day of school for 9th graders only. 10th, 11th, and 12th graders will join us on Thursday. Once again, freshmen get to learn all about their high school. They get to meet folks, understand rules, procedures, and processes so that when the rest of the students join them, they're in healthy shape. We've had a great first day. I've been out and about, saw lots of elementary schools this morning, saw a few crying kids, probably more crying parents today than crying kids. It can be, especially if it's your oldest child, that separation when you drop them off that first day of school can be emotional, he added. At Bonham, students were told about restroom procedures, dress code, and the campus's three core beliefs of respect, responsibility, and safety. Despite the traumas endured, such as the pandemic and the mass shooting, ECISD has had a great 3 years, Murray said. We anticipate, based upon all of the data that we've seen, when our accountability results are released next week, we know that it's going to be a good day for our community, a day unlike anything they've ever seen before. Our kids deserve for us to provide the highest caliber of academic experience for them. This year is all about leveling up. It's about going from good to great. It's about being the very best that we can do, Murray said. He added that they will be monitoring data throughout the year. Safety and security are in the forefront right now in terms of making sure that students and staff members remain as safe as they possibly can. We've instituted some new safety protocols. We want to make sure that everyone is safe in this environment. We also want to make sure that we connect with our kids. Research says that when teachers and students maintain a healthy relationship, that improves student achievement, and so we want to develop healthy relationships with the 33,500 kids that we serve this year, Murray said. Murray said there are teachers from 16 different countries in the district this year, and the pay scale has improved. They bring with them not only various languages, but also various cultures. It's an exciting opportunity for our kids to meet and experience folks from other communities. Our teachers were also welcomed back with a significant pay increase, Murray said. He added that the district is excited about what the Board of Trustees did for teachers and hourly employees by raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Over the last 2 years, we've had a $5 hourly rate increase for hourly employees, Murray said. Asked about improving the dropout rate, he said there are several ways that can be handled. When kids connect and develop healthy relationship, that's really first and foremost. It's difficult for a student to drop out of school when the people at school, the teachers, the administrators, the support professionals, are folks that provide support for them, folks that develop healthy relationships with them. That's really key, making sure that our kids can connect what they're doing in school with life. Making those connections between that Algebra 1 class, if you will, and the job that they're going to have in life. Our responsibility as educators is to connect school with the world of work and the world of opportunity. It is important that kids are made to attain success as they travel throughout the school system, Murray said. ECISD has a new partnership started last year with Acceleration Academics, which targets students that have already dropped out of school. We have lost some kids from the age of 16 all the way through 21. We're now going back and getting those kids and bringing them back into the school learning environment, Murray said. Bonham Principal Juan Dominguez said it's beneficial to bring the students in, teach them the core values. The biggest thing is it's a new school, new friends, new building, and so it's our job to make sure that we bring down that anxiety level for them. We make them feel comfortable and welcome, Dominguez said. He added that he is expecting 903 students, and his number one goal is to make sure the students are safe. ECISD Police Chief Todd Heiner addressed school safety and security. District police officers this summer underwent active shooter training and performed safety audit checks for doors on campuses to report any doors that are faulty. Heiner said they also perform weekly audit checks to ensure that other safety procedures on the campuses are implemented. We want to instill confidence with the parents and let them know that the schools are a safe place to send their kids, he added. Heiner said the audit is basically campus-specific. Some of our officers are assigned to those different locations, and they have specific tasks that they're there to look at, like exterior doors, fencing, interior doors. Also, the weekly audits are there to make sure that the teachers are closing their doors within the campuses. Some of those things are that are required from the state that just recently came out, Heiner added. The department had to make sure that all the procedures are being conducted properly across the board. There is a standard response protocol that is identified by the Texas School Safety Center as the standard for the state. Basically, that is your lockdown procedure. We train personnel and we also do drills every year, multiple times, he added. Several years ago, the ALERT training, which is Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Response Training, was identified as the way to train for an active shooter situation. It was endorsed by the FBI as well as the Texas School Safety Center, Heiner said. Heiner said there wasn't complacency in ECISD about possible school shootings before the Uvalde tragedy. We've been prepared for many years, and we have been training our officers. ECISD has always taken safety and security seriously and put it at the forefront because you have to have a safe environment for your kids. We worked very closely with external law enforcement agencies, Odessa Police Department, Sheriff's Department, DPS, in coordinating our efforts as well. We have always taken that seriously and we have trained and prepared, Heiner said. He noted that there is mandatory training in the form of a video that employees watch and have to check off that they have viewed it and understood it. There's a questionnaire at the end of that to make sure that they are actually proficient at what to do in the event of a lockdown, he said. Heiner added that bus drivers have a radio system that allows them to communicate and get emergency personnel to their location as quickly as possible. New Tech principal Gerardo Ramirez said the tradition since the campus opened 11 years ago is to acclimate students during the first week of school. Our freshmen are going over our norms as a school, everything from cafeteria norms, common area norms. They do school tours. Because our model is so different, they learn about project-based learning, what it is, about our rubrics, our learning outcomes, the whole process of being a new tech learner, Ramirez said. It's really an investment in our time before they hit the books, as it said. It's essential. It starts with us, with a strong foundation, and then it breaks the ice as well. You'll commonly see team-building activities. Every department here is covering different areas to make sure everything's addressed, he added. Ninth graders on Tuesday were following their bell schedules, going to all their class periods and getting to know their facilitators and the location of their classes. Career and technical education shuttles will start Friday to Odessa and Permian high schools. Buses to Odessa College for dual credit classes will start the week after. Murray said the majority of CTE students will be sophomores, juniors, and seniors, and they start Thursday. Ramirez agrees that the staggered start helps youngsters. I think our freshmen are going to be the group that are a lot more nervous. They're the ones that may be more anxious about school. They're leaving middle school models and going into the high school, and so it really gives us a time to get to know them, break the ice, and just make sure they're taken care of and they have everything that they need to start off. Especially with the pandemic, we had to change the way we did things, and now, in a sense, we're back to normal, so reinforcing those normal practices again is essential. We're seeing that as a staff as well, Ramirez said. To get into NTO, you have to buzz in and be verified. Our classrooms are locked, so if teachers are teaching, they're behind a locked, secured door. Those are two of the main security measures that we have, and we ensured that every classroom had a barricade and it was operating correctly, and training staff with best practices for our drills, which is something we do every year. We always have emergency procedures in place, but there are some heightened measures this year, Ramirez said. He added that teachers are acclimated and students get it and have not pushed back. They understand. They want to do what's best, Ramirez said. Another big one is IDs, because our buildings are used for multipurpose. It's important for staff, and then once we roll out IDs to our students officially, making sure that those are present and staff is aware of who's in the building, where they're going, and checking in with us, Ramirez added. In the cafeteria, he said, there's universal feeding for breakfast and for lunch, but students are inputting their ID numbers, and once they get their IDs, they will be able to scan them. That helps reinforce that expectation, high school-wide, Ramirez said. NTO Dean of Students, James Porter, said he has been checking on teachers to see how they're doing. Porter said Ramirez has set up mentor teachers so newer teachers are supported. First-year teachers came back a little bit earlier. They started like 2 days early, Porter said. He acknowledged that the students were nervous Tuesday, not knowing where to go or what to do. They have that lost-in-the-sauce look in their eyes. I'm surprised seeing them just now in lunch. You can see them sitting with their friends. They find their friends very quickly, he added. They find their little groups. Commissioners make $250,000 available. OA News at OAOA.com. After about 45 minutes in executive session, the Ector County Commissioners Court made the decision to make $250,000 available to the Salary Committee. Mike Gardner, Precinct 1 Commissioner, made the motion to allocate that money to the Salary Committee, and he spoke with the Odessa American after Tuesday's meeting about the decision. During the year, you will have things come up in departments that are outside of the budget, and this is strictly to do with salaries, Gardner said. You might need to adjust an area that you need to move people in, and you need to make a little adjustment. This gives us some money to have available to us in our budget to make adjustments. When we do our budgets, we fully fund our salaries for the whole year. You are never going to have 100% employment for the whole year. You are going to have people leave. You will probably never need that $250,000, but we don't want to tie our hands to where we can't retain employees if we need to make some adjustments. The commissioners also approved the court and holiday schedule for the 2022 to 2023 term. The court schedule passed unanimously, while the holiday schedule was met with opposition from Armando Rodriguez, Precinct 4 Commissioner. He made a motion to include Columbus Day in the holiday schedule. That motion died after his initial motion wasn't seconded. The holiday schedule, which includes 12 days, was approved 4-1 with Rodriguez as the lone dissenting vote. The court also approved to increase contract cap for the agreement between PermiaCare and Ector County. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths spoke after commissioners entered executive session. Griffiths explained the important relationship Ector County has with PermiaCare. We have to utilize PermiaCare daily in reference to individuals who are mentally ill and need assistance, Griffiths said. We couldn't do without PermiaCare. We have mental health deputies that collaborate and coordinate with the folks at PermiaCare daily. They provide services to our jail. They are invaluable. Don Stringer, Precinct 3 Commissioner, reiterated after Tuesday's meeting that a partnership that is beneficial for the Ector County Sheriff's Office benefits the entire county. PermiaCare does play an important role in our community, Stringer said. They are a great asset. The court also appointed Christy Hamilton of PermiaCare and Javier Gonzalez of the Odessa Police Department to the Ector County Sexual Assault Response Team Board, approved the joint election resolution for the general election and the City of Odessa election to be held November 8, 2022. Approved the notice of general and the City of Odessa election, Ector County early voting schedule, and Election Day voting centers. Rejected the proposal for life, AD&D, and supplemental life. Approved the change order number 1 for Cottonwood Road Phase 2 P.O. number 38312. Approved action on an alleyway vacation at 8100 North County Road West, being a subdivision establishing lots 28, 29, 30 in Block 17, containing 5.01 acres, part of Section 40, Block 42, T-1-S, Texas and Pacific Railroad, Ector County, Texas. Approved the following proposed consent agenda. Approve a line item transfer to General Fund Building Maintenance Motor Vehicle Equipment 001-710-5505 from Water Sewer Trash 001-710-5354 for $12,150. Approved the Ector County Investment Report for the quarter ending June 30, 2022. Approved a budget amendment to sales tax fund, jail, motor vehicle equipment, 005-420-5505, and to sales tax, 005-4006, for $36,450. Approved a budget amendment to general fund, library, library supplies, 001-690-5185, and to donated revenues, 001-4171, for $4,788. Approved the accounts payable fund requirements report for August 9, 2022, to review county financial statements and reports. Quick hits. West Texas Worship Conference. West Texas Worship Conference has been scheduled today through Saturday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. The conference will start at 4 p.m. today. The conference is designed to help you grow as a true worshiper. It is designed to be a resource for church leadership and their worship, creative and production teams to be empowered, encouraged, refreshed, and grow physically and spiritually in the areas of ministry service. Register at westtexasworshipcon-fronts.org. CRACE and STB Training. Westminster Presbyterian Church, 4901 Maple Avenue, has scheduled a civilian response to active shooter events. CRACE and Stop the Bleed, STB Training, presented by certified instructors from Medical Center Hospital at 6:30 p.m. today in the Fellowship Hall of the Church. CRACE will provide strategies for surviving an active shooter event, and STB will prepare you to respond to emergencies where there is massive bleeding. This training is free and open to the public, but in order to have adequate supplies, register by calling the church office at 432-366-1321, extension 2, or email westminister@wpcodessa.com. Got talent? The Permian Basin Fair and Expo are currently taking applications for the talent show through 4 p.m. today. There are two age categories, 12 and under and 13 and older. Entry forms are available online and may be dropped off at the Permian Basin Fair office, 218 West 46th Street. Finals will be held at the Permian Basin Fair at 7 p.m. September 10th. For official rules and regulations, entry form, or more information, visit pbfair.com/talentshow.html. SRSU to begin offering online teacher certification. Starting with the fall 2022 semester, Sol-Ross State University announced via press release that it will begin offering teacher certifications in a fully online format for those who already have a bachelor's degree. Students can be certified in either early childhood through 12th grade or 7th grade through 12th grade. According to Dr. Barbara Tucker, the Dean of the College of Education and Professional Studies, students can finish their coursework in 1 year, plus one semester for the final internship, or what is commonly known as student teaching. This is an exciting development for Sol-Ross State and for anyone who wants to be certified to teach and join the profession right from their own home wherever that may be in Texas, Tucker stated in the press release. The cost is $1,000 per course, and there are two available options, both beginning in summer or fall. The first option is for post-baccalaureate certification only track with six total courses. The second option is for a Master of Education degree with a teacher certification specialization and 11 total courses. This is a two-for-one program, Tucker stated in the press release. Students earn both a master's degree and a teacher certification. Sol Ross State has several online degree programs. Learn more at tinyurl.com/27JBXZPB. OC closed for convocation. Odessa College will be closed to the public August 19th until 10 a.m. to allow all full-time staff to attend the 2022 fall convocation. The college will open for business beginning at 10 a.m. and will observe extended business hours until 5:30 p.m. Student services offices will be open August 19th from 10 a.m. until 5:30 p.m. and on August 20th from 9 a.m. to noon to assist students with registration and admission in preparation for the beginning of classes August 22nd. Students are welcome to come to campus to register in person or to register virtually by phone, email, or on the OC website at www.odessa.edu and clicking on Register Now. For more information, contact the Wrangler Express Center, 432-335-6849. Texas View. UIL needs to mandate heat safety measures for high school football. The Point. We must protect student athletes from heat stroke, no matter what climate they live in. High school football practice is back for the fall season, but the summer heat hasn't gone anywhere. This year's heat wave has been setting records. It's critical that we do everything we can to keep our players safe. That means it's time for the University Interscholastic League to mandate more heat safety protocols. The UIL requires certain heat safety protocols and requires safety training for its athletic coaches and sponsors, but it leaves many other safety judgment calls up to individual school districts. Reporting by the Dallas Morning News shows that many districts aren't adopting heat safety best practices. One such protocol is wet bulb globe temperature monitoring, a tool that measures heat risk factors beyond the heat index. The Corey Stringer Institute, which is committed to preventing sudden death in sports, lists it among its best practices for heat illness prevention, but it's not a UIL requirement. The question is not whether wet bulb globe temperature monitoring is a good thing or a bad thing, Jamie Harrison, UIL deputy director, said. We discuss it in our guidance as a good thing. The question is whether it should be mandated at the state level. The UIL and its medical experts agree that these protocols are effective, but they don't support requiring them. Ultimately, Texas has a vast geography, Harrison said, and the climate varies immensely across the state. That makes a one-size-fits-all rule difficult, he said. But it would also seem to be all the more reason for a sophisticated climate monitoring system. We understand the reluctance to disadvantage teams in hotter climates, but ultimately student safety should come first. And at the very least, teams should have the tools on hand to understand and prepare for the conditions. Cold water immersion tubs should be an easy measure to adopt. The tubs can help to save an athlete experiencing exertional heat stroke. At Guthrie High School, where an 18-year-old student died in 2020 during football practice, a tub was not on hand. Our colleague Leah Asimakopoulos reported that combined, the tubs and the wet bulb globe temperature monitoring would cost about $300. That's a drop in the bucket. Of course, each high school district and each team will do things a little differently. But heat safety is crucial no matter the climate. No one does high school football quite like Texas. Our safety standards should also be the best.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.